You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast.
Hi, I'm Jamie Loftus.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Durante, and there's also a dog in the room.
You might have heard. Excuse you. What if we were fighting and you were just saying something really mean about me?
there's also a stupid dog
in the room. Aristotle's dog is here. His name's Jeff. We're outnumbered today.
Yeah.
There's a lot of negative energy coming in.
Well, this is the last podcast that we are recording in this location.
Yes. So it's sad. It's sad. Brody just clapped, but it's actually it's really sad. I was okay. So we are unfortunately not going to be recording at Meltdown anymore. Mm-hmm. Rest in power.
So we are the Bechdel cast. We talk about the portrayal and representation of
women in movies,
women in cinema from a feminist lens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's good to remember what we talk about sometimes. Because everyone in our reviews are like, "What? It takes so long for them to get to the point." Oh. Anyways, review our podcast on iTunes and say whatever you want.
Yeah, but try to be nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
We have an exciting theme today. We have a theme!
Yeah, this is an ambitious episode. This is the first time we've tackled two movies at once.
Yes.
And here's our guest... fist pumping into the air.
He's so ready.
So our guest today, he is a very funny comic, and you should check out his videos on his website. Brody Reed.
Yeah.
Hi.
Great plug.
It was the plug you asked me to plug.
It was. Check out the videos on my website. You guys remember those? .coms?
The .coms.
Et cetera.
I love the .coms.
It's great to be here. This is the first time I've recorded a podcast up here.
First and last.
I think first of many.
You're just going to keep scrambling
in here. This place
looks
like a war zone.
I'm going to come in here when it's condos and continue to record this podcast. That's right. We're being turned into condos.
We're going to be so rich by then that we can just open up our own studio in the condo that we own on this block.
Bechdel Evil. Glen is what it's going to be called.
Yeah, welcome to Bechdel Grove.
It's a gated community.
It's our scary Stepford community where we record our podcast.
So Brody, when we were asking you what movies you might want to discuss, and then you had said Jumanji, either the old one or the new one, and then we got an idea. Why not choose both?
I was hoping you guys would do this.
Really?
I was hoping in my heart of hearts, like when I said could be either, I was like, what if they pick both?
So welcome to the Jumanji versus Jumanji episode. I think we could put in a little like a ding there or not and just leave this description.
You can put in versus, but to be clear, I'm rooting for both movies equally.
Okay, so Jumanji and Jumanji.
Uh-huh.
I'd seen exactly 2/3 of one of these movies.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I would say closer to one half because with, and obviously from here on out, spoiler alert, I went to see Jumanji, the new one, with my movie pass. I didn't have time to see the whole thing. I'm like, oh, I'm going to stay till Nick Jonas shows up. So I stayed for an hour.
Sure.
And then Nick Jonas showed up. I'm like, oh, so thank God he's here, but I have to leave.
You didn't miss much.
Yeah. No.
It's not a star-making performance.
Wow, bitch, we are. And we're off. Nick Jonas is a star, very talented.
Yeah, I came running, yeah.
So, Brody, when did you first see, did you grow up with the original one?
I grew
from
up
95?
With the original Jumanji. I was born in 88, so I was a straight up 90s kid. Mm-hmm. Definitely hit me at a time, like, I would say close to, like, Space Jam, of just like, mm-hmm. oh, this movie was just destined to be in my life from, like, an early point. You
same.
Know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I've definitely seen it on TV or otherwise probably 10 times or so, and it's just like ingrained in my memory. Mm-hmm. And as I was like looking up this movie to remember stuff for the podcast, I was like, oh, it wasn't as like critically well received as I thought it was.
No.
In my head, it's like a perfect movie.
Right.
And it has like 58% on Rotten Tomatoes or something.
Huh. Yeah, that's
yeah, I was looking
surprising.
At the same thing. The new one was pretty well reviewed,
yeah.
Which was, and you know what? I loved it. I loved the new, anyways, what's your experience with Jumanji, Caitlin?
So it came out in 95 when I was like 9 years old. I was the exact right age to just be obsessed with this movie.
You're 31, and, bitch.
Bitch, I'm 31.
Love it.
And I saw this movie dozens of times growing up, and I probably didn't watch it for a good 2 decades or so.
Yeah.
But this was a huge movie from my childhood. My like family would yell at me because all I would do is just explain the plot to them. And they're like, yeah, Caitlin, we've seen it.
It's a pretty lengthy plot. It's a rich plot.
There's a lot of story beats.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the first Jumanji. I have lots of questions. I was too young to see Jumanji when it came out. And then I think when I was getting older, this is just like one of those weird movies where my mom's like, it seems inappropriate. Or we just didn't watch. We were not a Jumanji home.
Mm.
We were a Titanic home. We were a Pee Wee's Playhouse home. We were not a Jumanji home. So I saw it, obviously, this morning.
Of course.
Of course I saw Jumanji this morning immediately before I got here.
Did you even watch the Jumanji cartoon?
No, we didn't watch that either. I didn't know. I knew there was a cartoon, but what was the cartoon about? Was it like far removed?
It wasn't far removed at all. It was about the Alan character who lived in the jungle. It was just about them like going to the jungle that he lived in. So it was like an animated.
That time between?
I don't remember this cartoon at all.
Oh, it was really cool because instead of being in the real world and having the jungle come to there, they were just like in the jungle the whole time.
Not unlike
the
Jumanji
new movie.
Welcome to the jungle. 2017.
It's good.
So it's pretty sweet.
And there's also that movie Zathura, A Space Story that was like, this is the spiritual sequel to Jumanji.
I forgot about that movie, and it kind of was, it was okay
sort
movie.
Sort of. It was like Space Jumanji.
Yeah, I never saw it.
It was very moody and weird.
It was a little too moody. Yeah.
Yeah. Kristen Stewart was the lead.
Oh, I forgot.
It was a little too moody for a fun movie. Mm-hmm. You can't just be like, Kristen Stewart's the lead and it's a really fun movie.
Yeah. Jumanji at its heart is like, well, first of all, very like a dangerous movie and a very fun movie.
The stakes
are
extremely
high. Two things. Yeah.
In
they
both.
Are.
It's Roger Ebert reviewed this movie.
I can't wait to get into this conversation.
The original Jumanji, he said, is a gloomy special effects extravaganza filled with grotesque images generating fear and despair. 1.5 out of 4.
That's what I loved about it.
Is
that Ebert? You freaking dork.
Ebert's a narc. He's a fucking dweeb.
Well,
listen, I love him, but he's wrong.
Yeah, he's wrong a lot.
Well, even in 95, when CGI was pretty brand new, I knew that the CGI in this movie was terrible.
Oh,
I like
really
as
bad.
A 9-year-old, I was like, oh god, this is bad, and I hope it gets better because this
it was
is shit.
Pretty good.
It
like
is
a good mix of special and practical effects.
Yeah.
I liked the lion.
I love the lion.
I hate it. The monkey.
I like the monkey.
No,
like the
monkeys were uncanny valley as hell.
Yes.
I was like, this is, no one knows where to look. The eyeline's insane. They're like looking across the room and it's like, look, a monkey. And it's like somewhere else. It's all over the place.
Oh, gosh.
So wait. Okay. So let's tackle this. We'll go old Jumanji, new Jumanji, then Jumanji versus Jumanji.
Does that work? The ultimate showdown.
Then the ultimate showdown, which is the superior Jumanji. The twist, it's Zathura. Okay, there's a lot of great things about the first Jumanji. It's weird. I feel like I enjoyed the first Jumanji more.
Okay. Yeah, but, yeah, that makes sense.
But they were both so fun, and the second one is like, I feel like richer, and like, I don't know. There was like, they're both good. They're both good.
And they're wildly different.
They're extreme.
They're like, it's decades removed, and it shows. Like, the people who made the first one had nothing to do with the people who made the second one, and I still like both of them.
But it's still all dudes. That is something that is, the new Jumanji, it is kind of wild, like how, it was written by four dudes. It was directed by a dude, it was produced by three dudes, and it's still not the worst.
No, it isn't.
Like, it does well, but it's still, I was so hoping. I was like, oh, there's four writers, all dudes.
They asked their girlfriends at some point.
Hey, babe.
They're like, can you read this draft and let me know if it's problematic? Yeah. I mean, because it...
Does it pass a Bechdel test if Jack Black is a woman?
We had a lot of people tweeting at us when this movie came out asking us, and there was a whole discussion. And so we'll get there later.
First Jumanji. I have to say, my favorite part of the first Jumanji is the fact that Lilith from Frasier is in it.
Oh, is she Aunt Nora?
BB New Earth, baby. That's Lilith.
I didn't watch that show that much.
You never get to see BB New Earth look not extremely severe and yelling at Kelsey Grammer. And it, you know, it was great.
Cool.
It was great. Now she was just, she's kind of caffeying out in this movie. She's kind of like ack, you know, like kind of running around like where are the orphans kind of thing. but I like her, and I shipped her and the police officer.
Yeah.
Oh, David Allen Greer.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh, they had the smallest of moments, and you're just like, I would watch that sex tape.
This movie is David Allen Greer's whole career to me, personally. Like, I know he's got a rich career. I've seen nothing else.
Not even DAG on NBC or whatever network.
No, I haven't seen DAG. I've seen a little bit of, you know, In Living Color that I can remember. Mm. And Blank Man and stuff. And Kenan and Kel. But I mean, this is it.
Right, this is it.
David Allen Greer, hot. Let's just get that.
Pretty hot.
Sure, I mean, yeah.
A hot man. In this movie,
he's
hot. He's, you know, he's... okay, should we do the recap?
Yeah, let me do the recap.
I'm having a panic attack.
Yeah, we're doing two movies and we don't even know how to handle
let
it.
Let me be your guide.
Arguably,
let me be your jungle guide.
You're our, like, Nigel Billingsley.
You're our Rhys Darby or Reese, right?
Reese
Darby?
Yeah.
I was happy to see him in that movie. There's too much to talk about today.
So, we start... Jumanji lore begins in basically 1969, where a young kid named Alan Parrish has a daddy who is not very nice to him.
It's a daddy, too.
He's a daddy. He owns a factory.
And he's a
shoe factory. And somehow they're enormously wealthy.
Yes, daddy.
Played by the guy who plays Mr. Ismay in Titanic.
Totally didn't realize. You're killing it with the recognizing people in Titanic. I'm forgetting.
Thank you.
Who would have knew?
This takes place in New England at a shoe factory, which I literally do think is a reference to my hometown, Brockton, Massachusetts. I don't know if you've ever seen my tote bag I carry everywhere that says Brockton, Massachusetts, the shoe city. But there was at one time in my hometown only shoe factories. And now they're all abandoned buildings. It's a troubled place, but there's still one shoe factory open called Footjoy.
Oh, good.
Cool.
Check it out. Well, that's Footjoy.com, I'm assuming.
I want you to know I have a respect for cobbling and all kinds of shoemaking.
I'm from a cobbling town.
Yeah.
And so immediately it was resonating. And then they say New England. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah, this takes place in, like, Brantford, New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Brockton, Massachusetts, the shoe city.
Yeah.
Home of Rocky Marciano.
So Alan Parrish, he's, like, getting bullied, and his dad's all like, you need to be more of a man.
Be a man.
And he discovers, not far from the shoe factory, this, like, board game. And he's like, what's
this? A cool wooden board game.
It's a wooden board game. It's
nicely tarnished.
It looks expensive.
Yeah. It's a hot prop. It's a hot prop.
It's a hot prop.
Shouts out to the prop guy.
So
woman.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Or non-binary person.
We don't know who made the prop.
We don't know.
It was the 90s, so they didn't have non-binary back then. Tweet at me.
Was the prop master queer? We don't know.
So he brings home this board game Jumanji, and his friend Sarah comes over, and they're like, well, what if we just play the game that we found mysteriously? Yeah, there's drums beating. It's like, ooh, it's tense. So
only kids can hear the drums. It's like the Polar Express, but not bad.
So they start playing this game, and right away they realize it's not like other board games.
Ooh,
I know.
A manic pixie dream board game.
It is. It's got like, I have my handcrafted little figurines.
They bought me to have a mind of my own.
I've got etching.
It's like something you'd find on Etsy. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's something mysterious about this game, and it's bad things come out of it. There's bats all of a sudden, mm-hmm. and then Alan Parrish gets sucked into the game, and the girl, Sarah, runs away. She's freaked out. She doesn't know what to do.
Are you not a strong female protagonist if you can't handle a house full of bats?
Right, yeah.
You dumb bee.
Well, she gets a chance to redeem herself, like a protagonist.
That's true. 26 years pass.
26 years pass. Wrap that around your brain. 26 years.
It's referenced that, okay, I have a serious plot question.
Yes.
I can't tell how much of this was true or how much of it was like speculation on the part of the guy.
First of all, this is a biopic.
First of all, is Jumanji a memoir? Second of all, no, there's like a part where they imply that like everyone thinks that Alan's dad killed him and chopped him up into bits and hit him around the house. So did his dad like go to prison?
No.
So he just, in theory, everyone thought he murdered someone and got away with it.
It was just like town gossip.
They saw him yelling at him at the shoe factory when he ruined a machine.
Yeah, they're like, he's got motive. He was yelling.
He threw him in the machine.
He did. I mean, that is actually kind of like when he was insisting that Alan get his ass kicked to build character. I'm like, maybe he is. No, but daddy could never kill.
No. So, he just disappears. And then, they never figured out what happened to him. Mm-hmm. And then his parents die in 1991 or something like that. You see the gravestone. Yeah. So
it was a murder-suicide. They don't address that in the plot.
So
that's the next movie.
Right. Yeah. So 26 years pass, and there's now a new family moving into the big Parrish mansion. Mm-hmm. Again, they are millionaires, and they got their fortune from their shoe factory.
Lilith, the aunt.
Whose name is Aunt Nora in the movie.
Is it a different shoe factory? Sorry, never mind. Go ahead. Okay. Orphans move in.
Kirsten Dunst and the voice of Tails. From Sonic.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And Chip from Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Now you're impressed.
Yeah.
Okay. Not so, Sonic. It's fine.
Those characters' names are Judy and Peter, and they're like, 12-ish mm-hmm. and 9-ish, we'll say.
Yeah.
And their sister and brother and their parents died in a tragic car accident.
Skiing accident.
No. They went to go skiing, but they died in a car crash.
A car crash on the
way. Get your freaking facts straight,
I was just
Brody.
Like, that's way more interesting than me, so sorry.
Okay, so they move into the house with their Aunt Nora, and they discover the board game Jumanji that had been left behind. There's drums. They're like, what's the source of these drums? So they go up into the attic, and they find this board game, and they start playing it. But the two pieces that were used by Sarah and Alan in 1969 were still there. So they're like, what's this all about? They start playing. Some mosquitoes show up. Some monkeys show up. And they're like, I think this came out of the game. What's happening? And then little Peter rolls a 5 or an 8. Who remembers a 5? And then Alan Parrish, as a 26 years later, as Robin Williams, shows up. And he's been living in the jungle this whole time.
What a twist.
So they're like, oh my God, you need to help us play this game because it's scary. And these like monkeys and mosquitoes are scary. And he's like, no, I just finally got out. I'm not going to do more Jumanji stuff.
This whole sequence is so sad. Mm-hmm. First of all, as in most Robin Williams movies, in spite of the fact that this is a very like complex, interesting plot, Robin Williams, I feel like he just like in his contract, he's like, I'm going to be shouting 40% of the time.
Yeah.
A lot of very sad dialogue is screamed. But he comes out, he thinks he's still 9. which is confusing because even a 9-year-old would know that they were like 40, but whatever. He thinks he's
nine. He would have like gone through, he went through puberty and most of his adulthood in the jungle by himself. Yeah.
He's still a virgin though, so.
He's never kissed a girl.
Whoa, I didn't even think of that level.
Yeah,
Robin Williams is never fucked in this movie. He loses his virginity to an extremely adult Bonnie Hunt. That's wild. But he like tears through the town, finds out his parents are dead, like just like all these horrible things, and then the kids are like gaslighting him into continuing to play this board game that ruined his life.
Right. Which he agrees to do, and then they find out, oh, there's still another player. We need to go track down Sarah, who has turned into this, like, psychic, mystic type person, and she has, like, suppressed the memory of Alan disappearing all those years ago, and then all of a sudden, now she's like, oh, the thing that I had to convince myself was not real, it's real. Mm-hmm. So they finally all sit down and start playing, and then all this other crazy stuff comes out of the game. There's the lion, there's some quicksand, there's a hunter who
some
hunts
British
people.
Colonialist.
Also played by the dad.
By Daddy, yes.
By Daddy.
Daddy.
There's an earthquake, there's a monsoon, a stampede. So they're, you know, dealing with all of these obstacles that are coming out of the game, and then the way to make it all go away is the first token to reach like the center of the game, and they call out Jumanji, and then it's all over. Mm-hmm. That ends up happening. They win, all the stuff gets sucked back into the game, and there's like some denouement at the end where
ooh.
Right. Young Alan
Wait,
is like,
how many degrees do you have, Caitlin?
Several. Yeah, so then young Alan is like, oh, we're young again, and I can, like, appreciate my dad, who is also mean to me, but whatever.
Who still doesn't super, like, very, at the end, suddenly becomes a very good guy, and is like, mm-hmm. actually,
yeah,
boys can cry, and you don't have to go to boarding school. I love you. And you're just like, where did this come from, daddy? Like, are you, I think daddy's drunk in that scene. He just got like sauced up and he's like, actually, feelings are fine. Gotta go.
So then while they're still young, Alan and Sarah dump the Jumanji board game into a river. And then the last shot of the movie, I think are to believe that it washed up ashore in a different country because.
Yeah, in France. Right. Somehow.
And oh yeah.
Somewhere.
Wait, that's but, confusing. Oh no.
So that is pretty much where Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle 2017 picks up.
That's
where
the whole title.
A guy who is running on the beach, mm-hmm. still in Brantford, New Hampshire,
yeah.
mm-hmm. finds lodged in the sand the board game Jumanji, and he brings it home to his son. And his son is like, oh, who plays board
Young
games?
Metallica.
I'm all about video games. So then Jumanji transforms itself into a video game.
I love that. I think that that's like that so it, dumb it, that
it,
I love it.
Yeah, it really is. It makes Jumanji just like this kind of like science
it's
fiction.
It's like a deity.
Like, it's like this like predator monster thing that yeah. takes whatever form it needs to and that which, changes everything.
Which is like, if we're to believe Jumanji's that smart, wouldn't it be doing something different?
Yeah, right. Jumanji is like officially like an evil thing. It's not just a board game.
It's an anamorph. Jumanji's a straight up anamorph. Can turn into a video game. And also, so it changes into a video game, but it's still like not a video game that they super want to play. They're like, oh, this video game's old. I'm like, why didn't it turn into a better video game?
It turns into, in 96, the kid who's like, oh, this is like right up my alley.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then he gets sucked into the game, and then
he's
20 years pass. Right.
He's Nick Jonas.
20 years pass, and this kid has been gone for that amount of time. And then we're in present day, circa 2017, and there's a group of four teenagers who all get detention. It is Bethany, Martha, Spencer, and Fridge.
Fridge.
Uh-huh. A nerd, a jock,
hot girl, popular girl.
And just a girl who hasn't figured out who she is.
She's kind of like grumpy.
Needs to discover herself by being in a ridiculously hot body. That's how she's going to find herself.
Right.
So they all. Icon Fridge.
They all get detention and they find Jumanji, the video game, and they're like, well, what if we do this instead of their like detention duties? So they start playing the video game and they notice that one of the characters is already taken. So they take the other four and then they all get sucked into the video game mm-hmm. and end up in Jumanji, the jungle.
Yeah. They all pick very specific characters to play.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's very important. And they don't totally know what these people look like. They just go based on their descriptions of like what their skills are, like brave or, you know, knows maps and stuff.
Right.
And then they just jump into this world where their bodies are completely different. And then they're played by
an all-star cast.
Some of the highest paid celebrities in all the land.
So
I had a nickel for every time The Rock pokes his own muscle in this movie and goes, whoa, so, I'm so strong.
Spencer.
And I'm for it every
time. I love it every time. I'm like, he's having so much fun and we love him. And if you don't love The Rock, you're a violent psychopath.
Yeah, it's strange how this really stupid device to see celebrities on screen is like, I don't know, like, yeah, every time he flexes, you're like, fuck yeah, look at that nerd flex. You know, it's really dumb.
Right. It's great, though. It's like, oh, man.
I know. It's great. So Spencer's the nerdy kid. He turns into Dr. Smolder Bravestone, played by The Rock. Mm-hmm. Fridge turns into Franklin Finbar, played by Kevin Hart. Bethany turns into Shelley Oberon, played by Jack Black, and Martha turns into Ruby Roundhouse, played by Karen Gillan.
Right.
So this is our new cast that we're following for most of the movie. And basically they are tasked with returning this green, it's basically the plot of Moana. There's a green precious stone.
I kept writing it down as a hard flubber.
That too.
They've got a rock of flubber. They've got to get to some second location.
Fossilized flubber.
Yeah. Some old flubber.
And they have to return it to this jaguar statue to lift this curse that has been plaguing the jungle for some time, because this evil dude named Russell Van Pelt. Van Pelt is also the name of the manhunter from the first Jumanji.
Oh, wow. Hot ref. Oh. Take that, Zathura.
So they're given this green stone and they have to return it to the jaguar. That's their mission throughout the rest of the movie. So they
the mission kind of barely matters.
It barely matters. Yeah, it's more about their like friendship and teamwork and all that stuff. So they have like different like strengths and weaknesses. And then they eventually meet up with Nick Jonas's character, who is the kid who got sucked into the game in 1996.
What a cool guy.
What a stiff performance.
The best part, one of my favorite parts about the marketing for Jumanji is that the main billboard for this movie, and I guess it's sort of a twist that Nick Jonas shows up, but it wasn't enough of a twist to justify this. The people on the big billboards for Jumanji are Jack Black, The Rock, Kevin Hart, Karen Gillan.
Yes.
And there is a fifth spot. It's an alligator. Uh-huh. Yeah, Nick Jonas, not invited to the poster. There were separate.
That wasn't him?
No. He's replaced by a CGI alligator. I was like, that is fucking. Yeah. That is cold blooded towards Nick Jonas.
Like the first couple days it was in theaters, and it was like a genuine surprise for like the whole theater.
Nick Jonas, everyone.
People were collectively like, okay. Like a whole theater. It was awesome.
Just a group
and
of
so many people were whispering like, wait, who's that? And I'm like, Nick Jonas. I was like, oh, okay. Oh,
great. Yeah. 2008.
So anyway, they go through all these different levels of the game, and there's these bad guys after them, and there's different obstacles they have to overcome, and then they finally, at the end, return the
flubber,
the fossilized flubber to the jaguar, and then they call out Jumanji, and then they're returned back to their normal lives in Brantford, New Hampshire.
Brantford, Massachusetts.
Right, in Brockton, Massachusetts.
They literally took the BR. I really think that that's... Anyways.
And then they meet up with this kid, Alex, who is now Colin Hanks. And
which I buy. Nick Jonas to Colin Hanks.
Well, Nick Jonas is the avatar, so none of the avatars looked like the actual...
But still.
Oh,
but still.
Still. Yeah, I guess so.
But Metallica kid kind of looked like Nick Jonas, kind of looks like Colin Hanks.
A little bit. Yeah, true. I mean, they're all like black-haired white kids. Anyway, yeah, so that's pretty much the end of the movie. They're all like, oh my God. And then there's like a subplot where Spencer likes Martha and they like each other. Mm-hmm. And then they like get together at the end.
Kissing.
And there's kissing.
Kissing.
Okay, so.
So now do we talk about all of the women in both movies?
I don't know how to do this. Let's just start with the 1995 version.
Yeah.
And then we'll go from there.
I mean, there's what, five between them?
Yeah, there's
five women total.
Not a ton. Okay, if we're going Jumanji versus Jumanji, which would you say has the stronger portrayal of female characters? Because
Okay, well, let me talk through this because, okay, so in the first movie, the main characters are Judy and Sarah Whittle. And for the most part, there's generally, although it's not totally balanced, but sort of equal, like, male characters doing stuff to, like, save the day or get themselves out of a sticky situation, mm-hmm. and female characters doing the same. I would say Peter gets several big moments, and Judy gets almost none. And then, of course, like, Robin Williams is, like, doing stuff all over the place. And then, to a lesser extent, to a lesser extent, Bonnie Hunt's character, Sarah, is doing stuff. So I think there's more the male characters driving the story and kind of saving the day. But also, the female characters aren't necessarily damseled that much.
Because really, they're all saving each other pretty consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember even watching it as a kid, I was like, this is an equal, this is a good group dynamic.
It's a team. Yeah, like they do function as a team.
Right.
I don't know. There is, like, I agree that, like, Judy and Sarah, like, I would have liked to see Judy and Sarah talk to each other more. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of opportunities. And they do, like, I get that one of the stronger themes in the first Jumanji movie is, like, don't pump your young son full of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool, right? Because of, you know, Daddy and the whole thing. So we see a lot of, like, Alan and Peter, I think, for that reason of, like, oh, now Alan's daddy aged and he's telling a kid to, you know, nut up. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, no, I'm sorry.
He's like, wait, no, I don't want to become my daddy.
26 years in the jungle and I still became my daddy. Cry.
So then he's like, it's okay
wolf
to cry.
Because he's a wolf boy. I forgot to mention. Right. He at some point becomes a wolf boy.
Because he tries to cheat and then he turns into a wolf boy. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, those are the rules of Jumanji.
I love the wolf boy makeup.
It's really good.
My favorite, the part that sticks in my brain the most is when Alan pulls Peter aside and he just, like, rips his pants. And
his
he's
tail.
Like, better? And he's like.
It's such a dumb scene.
Judy, it's weird because she's kind of set up to be kind of like a more complex of, like, oh, she's processing her parents' death in a weird way, where the first time we hear her talking about her parents' death, she's, like, laughing. Where she's like, yeah, and it was so much, like, she's kind of, like, being silly about
classic
it.
Well, she's also,
teenager.
Like, making a lot of shit up about them.
Yeah,
like,
she's a big liar.
Yeah, she's, like, she's got a big imagination, and she's just, like, lying to strangers about it.
Right, she's not like the other orphans. She's making fun of her parents' death.
I mean, that's the kind of angst that I identify with. It's like, oh, she's a creative type. Right.
Well, there's an interesting dynamic with that, like, brother-sister duo, which we see a similar situation in Jurassic Park, where it's an older sister, older blonde sister, younger, darker-haired brother. And because I think we can assume the sister's a little bit older, she's doing more of, like, I'm going to protect my younger brother. I'm going to do more stuff. I'm going to take more action. And I thought we were going to see more of that in this movie as well. But
kind of drops off in the middle.
It does. Yeah. The first challenge that comes out of the game is the mosquitoes. And in that scene, Peter is, like, keeled over. He's hiding. He's scared. He's not doing anything. But Judy, like, grabs a tennis racket and starts, like, hitting the mosquitoes out of the window. So she's active in that scene. But after that, she isn't doing a whole lot to contribute to the events of the story. But like I mentioned a moment ago, there's several scenes where, like, Peter has this big moment where he either gets the game back after the pelican took it away, or he gets rid of Van Pelt in the store by, like, launching a canoe at him, or he, like, goes and gets the axe and then uses it to chop some spiders away. So he's, like, doing all these things that's, like, saving people or, like, having a big redeeming moment, whereas Judy, like, doesn't get any moments like that, really.
Yeah, which
at least
is too
after
bad because it's like she's set up as a character who's like, the kids are grieving in different ways. It's like interesting, but her arc definitely like kind of falls off in the middle. There's mm-hmm. one, they sort of try to like lazily tie it up where at one point she's like in Jumanji injures her somehow. And she is like, you know, and then like Peter goes over to her and she's like, actually, I am sad our parents died. I'm like, wow, you only had to be assaulted by a board game to be like, I'm sad our parents are dead. And that's sort of where she drops off. I feel like the more interesting choice and also a better use of the Sarah character would have been to give them similar moments of like Robin. I almost get why Robin Williams is like bonding with Peter more and, mm-hmm. and all that because he views Peter as himself. But it's like Sarah and Judy could have had moments like that. You know, we could have had, you know, maybe a stampede less or something. And
by the time we're at the end of the movie and they see the kids again after the years or whatever, and then mm-hmm. they like, it's like kind of an emotional moment because they finally get to see him again. Mm-hmm. I that part, I'm like looking at Sarah, I'm just like, I guess she got to know him like at parts we didn't see, you know what I mean? Like in the in-between.
Yeah, like they don't know each other as adults at all. Mm-hmm. This movie is also a very weird like chain reaction of various people triggering other traumas of other characters the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Like everyone, like the kids are like dealing with the recent death of their parents. Robin Williams pops out and they're like, actually, you have to stay near this thing that oppressed you for 26 years. And he's like, rats, I guess I do. And then they go find Bonnie Hunt. She, women be fainting, passes out. They, clearly without her consent, towed her over to a second location. You know how you just take an unconscious person without their permission to a second location. They bring her to the house. And then she is like fully like losing it.
Yeah, she's like calling her psychiatrist. And was like, right.
And there's like, it's a weird, like, not very 90s attitude towards so 90s. Women going to therapy of like, oh, that's kind of like stupid. Like, she's kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah, right? She's Phoebe from Friends.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what a, you know, she goes to therapy because something's wrong with her. And then they're like, you know, the most upsetting moment of your life, you have to stay. And also, Sarah's character, I'm like, I understand why Alan is a cartoon character, right? Because he's been trapped in a board game jungle for a quarter century.
Yeah.
Sarah, I don't understand why she's like, you know what? Let's involve two random children. She doesn't ask any of the questions.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a longer movie at that point. But
that's true.
Don't disagree.
I was like, man, there's no reference to the fact. I'm like, these are not their kids. And
well, they all have to play now because they're all in the game. Which I guess it's good that the movie requires there to be two female characters. Like the narrative is like, oh, well, we wrote it this way. So there has to be these two women. Because a lot of movies don't bother to require there to be women there.
Mm-hmm. Including the majority of the second Jumanji movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was no portrayal of women in the first Jumanji where I was like, oh, this is bad. But there's just, it just was like all just like underused or missed opportunities, I felt like.
I mean, you know, I feel that way about most black characters in movies. So, yeah, mm-hmm. totally.
Mm-hmm.
But David Alan Grier is used to great effect.
He is. And in every era of this movie, I love him when he's making a shoe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, so the first Jumanji, I mean, it's very of the time, where in the mid-90s, you know, filmmakers weren't like, oh, we got to make sure we're servicing our female characters well.
Right.
So
for the time, I think it does okay.
It does okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But fast forward to 2017.
Should we not talk about the Bechdel test with the first one?
Oh.
Or should we do it all at once?
I don't know. Again.
I don't know.
Let's.
What are the rules?
There's no.
We're making this up as we go.
Let's do it now.
Okay. So the first one, I think, does pass the Bechdel test.
Yes, I agree.
It does.
There's a scene where Aunt Nora, and then we learn the real estate lady's name.
After she has died?
After she's gotten bitten by a mosquito.
She looks very dead.
She could be dead.
She looks dead.
She's alive in the new timeline.
But that's true. But Judy says, isn't that Mrs. Thomas, the realtor? So we find out her name, and she and Aunt Nora have a conversation about the house that Mrs. Thomas is showing everybody.
Angie and Judy have a conversation where there was a one-line exchange that passed, mm-hmm. where she wasn't talking about daddy.
Right. Yeah, because they're like, oh, I'm going to put a bar over here. And she's like, that sounds lovely. You and your kids are going to be very happy here.
And she's like, actually, they're orphans. Which is like, actually, your realtor doesn't need to know that, but cool. Judy and Nora talk, a few different one-line exchanges between them. Mm-hmm. And then Judy and Sarah, but not that much.
Well, there's a scene between Judy and Aunt Nora where Judy's like, we found out why you got this house so cheap. A child was murdered here. And Aunt Nora is like, I'm sick and tired of all your lies. You're grounded. And then she's just like, fine, there's nothing to do in this stupid town of Brockton, Massachusetts anyway.
And she's right.
And FYI, it wasn't a lie. But I don't know. Alan Parrish does get mentioned because she's like, oh, Alan Parrish got murdered.
Yeah, but there were two lines there.
Yeah, there were. Okay, so yeah, that I would say passes. And then later on, Judy and Sarah, Judy says, what's going on? And then Sarah's, oh, they're right outside that like discount supermarket store.
Yeah.
And Sarah's like, oh, apparently there's a sale going on. I don't know if that's supposed to be a joke what, but.
Didn't land for me.
Didn't land. And then some monkeys go by.
The 90s. People loved to shop. People loved, expendable income.
It was flush. People were flush.
They are the only characters who know what's happening in
this
story.
This is first term Clinton shit, baby.
They see just chaos happening and they're like, it's a sale. It's like, no, it's all the shit that you unleashed from this game. Anyway.
I think that was some, like, capitalism humor that they were shoehorning in of, like, sales are crazy because people are always shopping brick and mortar.
Speaking of, there is, well, here, I'll get to that in a second. So, then three monkeys go by on a motorcycle and Sarah says, did you just see three monkeys go by on a motorcycle? And Judy's like, yes. And then Sarah says, good girl. Passes the Bechdel test.
It does. It sure does. I had that written down too.
I also think there's commentary, not deliberate, but it feels as though a statement is being made retroactively, where whenever Van Pelt goes to try to buy a gun in the store, in the gun shop, he's like, I need to acquire a new firearm. And the guy's like, oh, well, there's a waiting period and you're going to have to fill out some forms. And then Van Pelt dumps a bunch of like ancient coins in front of the guy. And he's like, or I could fill these out. And then they give him this like insane assault rifle right away. And I feel like that's a commentary on how easy it is to get very dangerous weapons in this country.
I think it's like commentary they didn't even maybe mean to make.
Right. Like that might have just been like, this is how it is.
Yeah.
Because this is from the same director who directed Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Captain America, the First Avenger.
Whoa.
Oh.
Interesting.
Wow.
What a long, illustrious career he's had.
Interesting. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
White guy, if you can believe it.
I can't.
Directed, but he's directed a lot of good movies. Does it pass the Bechdel test if it's BB and New Earth screaming at monkeys?
Yes? I'm going to say
the monkeys are screaming
hard
back.
No on that one.
Monkeys are screaming
but
back.
What are the monkeys
saying?
They could
be talking about men.
Right. The monkeys are certainly talking about men.
They could be MRA monkeys. We don't know. You're right. It was just a question I had.
Sure. I appreciate the tough questions you're asking.
Thank you. Oh, another thought on the first one. What if this is the prequel to Flubber? Because then, fan theory. We see them, they're married, Bonnie Hunt, Robin Williams at the end. And they're like, we rescued your parents. Weird joke at the end of like, we're going to save your parents from dying.
Right.
Hilarious. I actually thought that was funny. But then we don't know what like Alan does for a living, do we? Does he say?
No.
We just know they have money.
He needs their dad's like marketing expertise.
For Flubber.
For Flubber.
It's the Flubber. Shoe company.
Okay.
Yeah. Wait, you're totally right. He's the
head of the shoe factory.
Oh, shit. Okay, so she has to be...
But,
I was
good
so
guess.
Close to be like, they need to be marketing this new consumer product, Flubber.
Also, Flubber does not hold up.
I've never seen Flubber.
That's fine. I haven't seen Flubber in at least 10 years.
Oof, it does not hold up.
Hmm. Well... On to
sorry to break heart.
Yeah. There. Please don't mention Flubber in my presence.
Caleb, you just sounded triggered by a mention of Flubber.
Both this Jumanji and the 2017 Jumanji have several cats. There's a lion in the first one. There's some jaguars in the second one. And I just want to take this opportunity.
Pass the Bechdel?
No,
if
but
it's cats.
Cats do have 8 nipples. This has been Cat Facts with Caitlin.
Jumanji. So I don't know if Alfred Molina could be in Jumanji. I think he could have been Daddy. I think he would have been a great daddy.
I think he would have been a good Van Pelt in the new one.
Oh, he would have been a good daddy there too. Even though Van Pelt isn't like daddy, but like he's giving those vibes. He's like a lot of daddy.
He's like uncle.
Daddy heavy. There's, I mean, like both of these movies kind of have these overarching themes of like, what does it mean to be a man? What is a real man like?
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm.
That's like one of the written by men. Right. Because it's written by a bunch of frothy dudes who.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to mention in the first movie. So Alan's mother is present and there, but if there's a dad and a son, usually in movies, only that relationship gets explored, like the father-son yes. relationship, yes. and the mother is often totally sidelined or just like not even bothered to be written into the scenes.
Insanely so, where in this movie, I don't even think the mom finishes a sentence successfully one time.
Yeah, right.
Where daddy's always like, actually, you dumb bitch, get in the car. Like, and it's just like, oh no, we don't know what her name is, we don't know anything.
Right. So yeah, that was there could have been an opportunity for, you know, some mother-son relationship exploration, but of course.
Totally. Jumanji was written by the same author as The Polar Express.
No way. What?
Chris Van Allsburg is addicted to sounds that children can hear that adults can't. He's recycling material, lazy, stupid. Hot take. Chris Van Allsburg, kiss my ass. Is he still alive? He's still alive. Kiss my ass. I'll fight you.
Is there anything? Oh, another last thing about the first movie. Sarah tries to surprise kiss Alan when they are adults.
It's she doesn't after. Try to surprise kiss him.
Well, she leans in for a kiss and he right. rejects her.
I would say that's not a surprise okay. kiss. I'd say that she made an offer and he made a refusal and she accepted that decision.
True.
She didn't Brendan Fraser and the mummy lunge at him through a cage.
But then they do share a kiss at the end when they're both like 12. And she's like, I want to yep. do something before I feel like too much of a kid. That's what? Weird. Yeah. And then she like that's leans in line. And kisses him and he's all like. That's your pickup line?
That's my line I use, yeah.
But yeah, so then they do share a kiss and.
It's fine. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, the first movie is very white and hetero. There's a lot. It's very 1995. I think for 1995, it does all right. And it's a fun movie.
It's a fun movie.
It's a fun movie. Yeah.
Do we move on to the second one
yeah,
now?
Yeah.
I thought, let's do it.
Okay. I mean, this movie sets
this one's wild.
An interesting precedent where one of the... So there are two female characters and two male characters in this movie. There's mm-hmm. Spencer and Fridge, and there's Bethany and Martha. Yes. But as soon as they turn into their avatars, which are the characters we see for the most part in the movie on screen, turns into three men and one woman. So Martha, she gets into Ruby Roundhouse's avatar body.
Right.
So she stays as a woman. But Bethany ends up in
Jack Black.
Yeah.
And then there's that beautiful line read of, I'm an overweight middle-aged man.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Black says, basically looking to camera.
Which, when you realize that it's, you know, Bethany, the one saying it, she's fat-shaming herself, her avatar.
I would argue she is, but she's also stating a fact, which is that Jack Blake is an overweight middle-aged man in this
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of fat-shaming himself.
Yeah.
I mean, as an actor, but as a character.
Right.
No. There's a lot of meta. It's so hard to navigate.
It's very meta, yeah. And that's the world we live in. 2018, 17 is a meta year.
Well, what's even crazier than that to me is the fact that, so she is now in a male body. There's mm-hmm. that whole scene where she has to pee. Mm-hmm.
Does the scene where she says, come look at my dick, Martha, no thanks, pass the Bechdel test?
I don't know. This is our age old thing, because when we talked about this before, because a lot of people were asking us about this.
Yeah.
If whenever Jack Black's character, who is effectively a female character, talk to Martha, does that pass the Bechdel test? And I think we concluded that no, because the representation is still of a man on screen.
But then watching it through a second time, I'm now like, I'm willing to see it either way. When I didn't watch the whole movie for some reason, like there were a few scenes between those two characters that I didn't see the first time. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, but there were some scenes between those two characters that I did not like. Mm-hmm. Like, let me teach you how to be sexy.
Right.
Instead of using the skills that we know you have.
Yeah.
Like, shit like that was like, okay, this movie is written by four dudes.
True.
But there was like other scenes where they were like getting to know each other and like getting to understand each other. And it's weird because like the four teenage characters are all badly written. Of like, there's no shades of gray in terms of like nude, junk, weird girl, hot girl. And so it's like all these like kind of badly written characters getting a deeper understanding of badly written characters in different bodies. It's just, but there was like that scene between Jack Black and Karen Gillan where they're like in the jungle and Jack Black's kind of like, you know, they were like, we thought we hated each other, but actually we didn't. And that's good.
Yeah. That's like kind of a stronger like female friendship than was formed in the first movie. So.
Right.
Yeah.
it's a mind fuck.
Yeah. I'm in the camp of, I still think that the character is still that girl. Mm-hmm. So I think that it does pass it. It doesn't change the fact that it's still an on-screen representation of a man playing woman's character, which is essentially, you know, I don't know what
a cheat code. I feel like it's a Hollywood cheat code.
It is a cheat code. Yeah. It totally is, but it's played for laughs, and in a more like equal worlds, then it would be cool. If it was the opposite, maybe, then maybe
I was trying to grapple with, because I was like, okay, well, we have a teenage girl character ending up in a male avatar body, which takes away one of the female characters that we see representation of on screen. Mm-hmm. Right. Couldn't we then also have one of the male teens end up in a female avatar body? Because that would even out the representation. But then I was like, well, what are the implications of that? Because as a horny teen boy who, if it's a movie, he's probably hetero because, you know, movies be very hetero.
Yes.
He would probably be like, oh, I'm going to basically, I don't know, assault my own body. Like, I feel like that could have happened. It didn't have to happen. If that is how the story went,
if you gave Jack Black enough time, he would have jerked off.
Oh,
100%. I can't even.
So.
Because he even says goodbye, or Bethany says goodbye to her penis at the end. She's like, bye, little dude.
Which is, I say goodnight to Mike.
So. Bye bye. I don't know. Something I thought was weird was like three of the characters, when they're put into the video game, are put wild. Like everyone's out of their element physically.
Yeah.
But
they are all in different bodies, if we gotta be fair.
But the protagonist, Spencer, is put in a body with no disadvantages or any, like, is at no point, like, it's different and it's uncomfortable because it's different. But in terms of like skills, weaknesses, none.
Yeah.
Like, hot, strong, he's really not at a physical disadvantage where, in theory, he upgrades, right? And then everyone else is like challenged by their new fleshy prison of like, Fridge is suddenly small and not as strong. And like, you know,
With Martha
is suddenly.
I would say that's true, but like, considering that, like, the Jumanji methods is like, it has to be such a team dynamic.
Yeah.
That when you think about, I mean, like, being like hot and strong and like all that stuff is fucking sick, but really those are all like physical things. And when it comes to like, if I gotta read a map or if I gotta figure out what poisonous is, it's like, he doesn't, those are his weaknesses, is that he needs to rely on those people. I mean, like, that would be cool if his weakness was like, has to rely on other people.
Codependency. Yeah. That would be my video game character weakness. Good at walking long distances.
Yeah, and it is played
weakness,
for jokes.
Codependency.
I like that how efficiently they use all those things as jokes, like eats cake.
I like burst out laughing when Kevin, because I thought that he was just like, I didn't know where that joke was going, and then he literally exploded.
I like totally saw it coming, but then it just happened. The whole like style of this movie is completely different because it's just this like, it takes place in a video game, so these bigger things can happen. And it sets up that the characters do have lives and die like multiple times before it's like, ooh, the last one or whatever.
Right.
It is thrilling in a way that, like, it really does remove a lot of the danger, but it just throws a lot of jokes in, and I think that's
some silly deaths.
It's super silly.
The Rock flank is shoved off a cliff. Kevin Hart explodes. Jack Wyatt's eaten by a hippo. Like lots of
like
fun.
Really violently too.
It's a funny movie. I really
it's fun.
It's a fun there, but it like on a discourse level, it is like what do we
all
do
over
with
the place.
This? What do we
well,
do with
another
this?
Another thing is so we talked about this in the Lara Croft Tomb Raider episode where Karen Gillan's outfit is, we can assume, the movie commenting on how unreasonable like female video game characters present and how they're dressed and all that stuff.
But again, I feel like that is the movie in the same way that it's like we're making jokes and acknowledging that Jack Black is taking up the space of a female character. The way that Karen Gillan's dressed for the entirety of this movie is the movie trying to like have its cake and eat it too.
Exactly.
Where it's like we're gonna acknowledge that this is like weird and it is sort of but it's not
like
really commentary.
It's not challenged nearly enough.
It's just acknowledged.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like mainstream feminism where people think that what people want from feminism is that like, ooh, I'm a woman and I can be sexy. It's just like, there's a lot of screen time devoted to just like, be confident, girl.
The whole, that was like the main source of like the female characters, like aside from the mindfuck of Jack Black, which I just don't know that we'll get to the bottom of. That maybe it'll just take years and time and papers will need to be written about this decision that was made. But when Bethany and Martha, basically Bethany, hot Instagram girl, is teaching Martha, who verbally abuses a gym teacher and is like deified for it. she's like, I don't like sports and I hate gym teachers. And then the gym teacher's like,
detention.
She 100% went home and like cried that night.
But then
there's that scene where like I guess it's like Martha has to distract some male characters. And we already know she is two male characters. We know that she's a karate master. They do throw in that weird dance thing
fighting.
And the second I saw that, I'm like, that's the only thing we're going to get to see her do is the sexy thing. Or that'll be the thing we see her do the most. And that's exactly what happened, where the whole team, they're usually a good team, but there's this one moment where they're all like, Martha, you have to go be hot at those men. And if you don't want to, you can
guys.
Do it.
Guys. We've never taken on that many guys at once.
It's two guys.
Like a dozen of them.
They're, with the Rock is right there. They're like, there were so many options.
Yeah.
And none are acknowledged.
It was
they're
such
like,
a weird choice.
It was
There's that very, very long scene where Bethany as Jack Black teaches, and that's, I think, played for a lot of jokes
it's
too, because
jokes,
it's,
sure.
you know, Jack Black pretending to be this like teen Instagram model, teaching her how to be desirable to a man. And Martha is not good at that. So she doesn't successfully seduce them or distract them, really. She only accomplishes what she set out to do, which is to, you know, distract them or whatever, defeat them by actually utilizing her skills and her strengths and fights. The fighting
but mostly
is
dances. I feel like
dances, but well, I don't know. I think there's a decent length scene where she is
it
fighting.
It took her
them.
3 minutes to beat up two dudes, and there were constantly like throwaway little things where a male character would come out and be like, "Oh, it looks like you got this." It's just like, did I see that during the Rock scene? No.
And, yeah, the fighting was sexier. There were moments where she's like, you know, kind of scrappy and like actually felt tough and like felt like she was actually fighting
she
and not being
of,
all objectified.
Like female action moves, which is like, which is a style of like, there's always that move where a woman like jumps and like attaches her crotch to a guy's face and then flips him down. I'm just like, does that need to be in every movie? Like what? Do something like that.
Yeah.
Crack an
X. I feel like the way she fights is kind of sexualized in a video gamey kind of way. They make her dance before she fights. They make her do this long, goofy improv exercise. It just looked like an improv 101 class of a woman being forced to like goofily squish her breasts together to make it, you know.
I'm sure she called her manager after that.
Some real UCB 201 shit going on in this scene. And I just like, you can cut that scene and the movie isn't different. You can have her fight in that scene, and it's just, that was some real like mainstream movie shit that didn't need to be there. And I would argue that there's no part of that scene that is good. I think it's just a bad 5 minute chunk in an otherwise pretty fun movie.
I mean, how I think that it should have gone is because they do need to get into the transportation shed and there are those dudes guarding it. So I feel like it could have been The Rock and Ruby, whose skills are fighting and physical strength. So they should have approached the two guards, like fought them in like hand-to-hand combat while the other three sneak into the shed and like get the helicopter. Like it didn't need to be just her, knocking
the guards out could have been like 10-second cutaway of just like, well, we did it, now we're in.
Right. Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Or if they wanted to go into that storyline that badly, a choice that could have been made that doesn't end with like, and conventional hotness saves the day.
Yeah.
Is that if everyone is like, hey, go do this, go be hot at these guys and distract them, and then we see her decide not to and, you know, show her skills instead, and then they all have to be like, whoa, maybe we shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
if they did the Jack Black training thing and you're just like, you know what, this is stupid, I guess. And
yeah, I'm just going to go punch them in the face. Right.
Like, we can have the Jack Black improv scene.
Like, ooh, you know.
Right.
You got this girl and shit.
Yeah, and then as long as the takeaway is like, but that's not how you would actually resolve a problem. but I feel like that doesn't fully come across.
Right.
I don't know. Hated that.
Yeah, that whole sequence could have been handled in a much more empowering way for Martha.
Hated it.
There is a moment, I think shortly before that, where Spencer is consulting with Fridge, and he's all like, I'm really into Martha. I don't know what to do about it. And I think Fridge is like, well, she likes you, but like, she's into you. Mm-hmm. And then
Fridge fucks.
Fridge fucks.
Fridge fucks. That's made clear to us very early on.
Yeah, half the cast fucks.
The Rock says, what if she tries to kiss me? And then Kevin Hart says, then just kiss her back, man. And then The Rock says, what if she tries to kiss me without warning? Oh, you mean a surprise kiss?
Bam, bam, bam.
What I'm trying to say is just ask for consent, everyone. If you want to kiss someone, just, you know, check in with them and see if it's okay.
Yep.
Anyway.
Good point.
Thank you so much.
Good point. This movie's so weird. I don't know. And then Nick Jonas shows up and it's like, you know, apparently I'm the only person in the world who's like, love it. Keep him. He belongs here.
You spend a lot of time with like the cast who in their own right are like, well, sort of defined characters in like a comic way even.
Yeah.
And then Nick comes along and he's just like, well, here I am.
He just makes a bunch of jokes about 1996.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally all he does.
There's also a moment where he's like getting introduced to all of them, and then they point to Jack Black and they're like, this is Bethany. And he's like, you're a girl? And she's like, woman.
Yeah.
And then Fridge says, in real life you'd probably want to hit that. And it's like, oh, okay. So like, there was a split second where she was like feeling empowered and she's like, I'm not a girl,
and
I'm
then
a woman.
Bing, let's deflate then, that yeah, as quickly
and
as
like,
possible.
Oh, but you want to fuck her for sure,
by feminist icon Kevin Hart.
I think at the end of the day, you know, you can make the argument that Jack Black's character is a woman, because that's just an avatar that a female character is playing the game as. But at the end of the day, the on-screen representation is basically four dudes and one woman, because between The Rock, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, Nick Jonas, that's four dudes to the one woman figure that you see on screen.
Right.
So it's not, I mean, that means that if a woman had gone into another female avatar body, that means that that actress would have been paid for that role.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead, Jack Black is the person who got that payday.
It sucks because it's like, I love Jack Black. I think he does a good job with what he's given.
Given that was the choice,
I think he's, and you usually hate Jack Black.
Yeah.
I really like Jack Black. I think he does a good job in this movie. But yeah, it's like this movie tries to have its cake and eat it too in a way that I think will probably be a continuing trend in mainstream movies.
Yes.
Where they will try, you know, attempt to represent any sort of movement or progress while basically keeping things the same exact way. I think this is a weirdly egregious example of that.
Yeah.
And kind of a wide swing on the part of this movie. I think it works in the plot, but it doesn't bode well for the world.
Yeah, it works in a popcorn way, but I mean, like, even side characters. I mean, Reese Darby's character could have been a woman. Bad guy could have been a woman. Yeah, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
All of the bad guys, right? Mm-hmm. There's tons of, yeah. We do see two moms. We see Spencer's mom and
we do see three female teachers.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. None of them are given names that I noticed.
Same.
But the gym teacher is a woman. The teacher who yells at Bethany for FaceTiming during class is a woman. And then the teacher who catches Spencer and Fridge cheating is a woman. So this is no excuse. And then also, it's tricky of like to say like, oh, Martha and Bethany are like are trope characters, majorly trope characters, but so are Spencer and Fridge.
Yeah,
you could argue just the characters are not very well. And I think like narratively that almost makes sense because you have to have pretty simple characters.
There's so much exposition in this movie,
right? Where it's like if you're going to, you can't put an extremely complicated four extremely complicated characters into four different bodies and then have them get to know each other. And so, I don't know, this movie's weird.
I see a lot of meta trends like that in like big blockbuster movie these days. Like, my favorite movie from last year was Power Rangers, Saban's Power Rangers.
Wow, hot take.
And same thing of like some subversions, like they have like a kid with Asperger's and stuff, but then like it's very much like I'm an angry lesbian, or like I'm a jock who his dad fucking doesn't understand him and stuff.
Right.
But it's still like it does work.
I know. It's like for the movie it works, but it's like okay, it's confusing. This movie's confusing. And I feel like I can fully understand why so many of our listeners were like, I'm struggling with Jumanji.
Yeah,
but it is nice to see, even though they're stereotypes, they don't like treat each other super shittily, and they do solve problems in a way that I feel like is like modern, and like we're gonna like get to the root of your emotional issue and then like try to fix it this way. So it's like it oddly shows progress on the first movie just because it took place, you know, 20 years after, but I mean, like, not like consciously. It wasn't like
weird, where it's like
trying to make a statement or nothing.
Like, the male relationship definitely still takes precedence over the female friendship, but less so in the second movie. We at least see a friendship, I think, start to develop between them, and then it's kind of sold out later on. But there was that good scene that I liked between Karen Gillan and Jack Black, where they're like, we don't have to hate each other. Where it is normally assumed, if there's two teenage girls in a movie, they hate each other, or they're fighting over a boy, and that doesn't happen here. And that's nice. And they state that pretty explicitly. That's good. Because as opposed to in the first Jumanji, where it's like, there's a sale. Good girl.
You saw monkeys, right? Cool.
Yeah. So the second Jumanji movie is just, you have to watch it. It's a wild movie, but it works.
I wonder if this will be one of those movies that just gets forgotten and no one talks about it in a couple of years, or do you think it's gonna,
people will remember it but they will still talk about it as a joke,
right?
How commercially successful was this Jumanji movie? Oh shit, okay, you know what, this movie almost made $1 billion.
Oh my god.
Jumanji made $950 million. Yeah, total. Oh, but like, fuck. Holy shit, this movie made so much money that I just had like my blood pressure just rose at sea. How much money Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle made.
It's the type of movie that's going to like crush in international markets.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was in theaters for like ever.
For a million years. It was in, oh my God. This movie made so much money. That's crazy that they wouldn't put Nick Jonas on the poster. That's so violent of them to do. Oh, Nick Jonas. You know, he doesn't have an acting career ahead of him. I'll tell you what. Tell you what,
he's just got a rich career of crushing pussy forever.
Listen, Nick Jonas is gonna be fucking for a long time. He's, oh God, hot brag, a Jonas related brag.
Oh.
My best friend, one of my best friends growing up, Lois, was really into the Jonas Brothers. That's brag number one. She would drag me to Jonas Brothers concerts, even though I was more of a Bright Eyes girl myself. That's brag number two. Uh-huh. But I would go because I didn't have any other friends. That's brag number three. And so there was one Jonas Brothers concert in 2007, I think. We were like freshmen in high school. And they were filming a music video. So if you look at listener challenge, if you go to the music video for When You Look Me in the Eyes, 2007, you can see me in the background looking very bored at a Jonas Brothers concert.
Wow.
It is clearly me. I look the same as I did when I was 14.
Huge brag.
Huge brag. Sorry about it. But, you know, people have to know.
Well,
so
congratulations.
I'll post it on the Twitter.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, do it.
Does anyone have any other thoughts about either of the Jumanjis?
I love any movie that cooked into, like, saying the name of the movie over and over throughout the movie is cooked into the title, where the climax of both of these movies have to be shouting the name of the movie. I love it.
Yeah, I really...
I love it.
I've watched the second movie twice, and both times I did not appreciate the end beat where they were like, why isn't it working? Say the name! Oh, yeah! Jumanji!
Welcome to the jungle! No, just Jumanji!
Oh my God, even another parallel to Moana, where at the end Moana's like, I know your name, and it's her name's Jumanji.
I am Jumanji. There's ever that amazing moment in Titanic where they shout Titanic as it sinks. Oh man. Well, this was, okay. What is there a better way to end our time at the beautiful Jeff?
Oh, dog Jeff.
Jeff?
Simmer down.
Cool it, Jeff.
No, this was the best way to do it. So let us determine whether or not Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle passes the Bechdel test. There are a few scenes where women in women-identifying body... I don't know how they even... Okay,
yeah,
so...
Okay.
Hard to know.
So where Bethany is talking to her friend Lucinda, whose name we do find out, that does not pass because they are talking about a man. And then the teacher comes up and interrupts them. But
the teacher doesn't have a name. There's three different interactions. Or no, there's two different interactions with teachers that could pass if the teachers have names, but they don't.
But they, because moments later, Martha yells at her gym teacher and then gets detention. But we never...
If a woman's shaming a woman for her profession, does it pass the Bechdel test? Not in this case, but it could.
Nope. There is a moment when they're in detention and Martha says to Bethany, are you going to help or are you too pretty? And Bethany says, I'm too pretty. And that technically passes.
That does pass. That does pass. I had that written down. I was like, yikes. We've been encountering a lot of problematic passes recently.
I know.
We'll never top She's All That. You should kill yourself. But we can get close.
Yeah, we can get close. There's a few moments after that in the movie. They're like trying to figure out whether or not they want to play the Jumanji video game. And Bethany says, oh, she's not big on fun. And then Martha's like, fine, okay. And then Bethany says, this might be the lamest thing I've ever done. And Martha says, I highly doubt that. Shout out to the movie Doubt.
Thank you.
But
you said it. I didn't. Doubts out. Everyone take their doubts out.
I don't know if this passes or not because they're more talking into a void than to each other. So I'm not really sure about that one. So there is the scene where we've already talked about it, where Martha and Bethany, but as their avatars, so Karen Gillan and Jack Black are like, oh, well, there's a moment where Martha's like, I need to borrow your jacket because I feel like I'm wearing a bikini. So that's like, right. But it's not nearly, again, her outfit is not challenge nearly enough.
No, not. I think not at all. I think that, and there was, I remember seeing that like clickbait written about when the first posters were released, and then it was immediately diffused by like, oh, it's okay because they're making fun of video games. It's like, yeah, but no.
Also, video games are still bad, so.
Yeah. It's like that will change nothing.
Yeah, I really hate the excuse of we're putting it in this context like as a commentary, but we're still doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. Right. I think the more effective choice there is to, even if she starts that way, have her change.
Yeah, exactly. They go to a bazaar. Surely there's like some clothes she can.
She could have gone, and then she, and then we can have women be shopping.
Ooh, right. I love it when women shopping.
So you can still
try on hats.
Yeah, you can have the whole montage.
Oh my god, the Wonder Woman montage where they're like, "We can't make you less hot." They love a montage.
But yeah, in that scene, Bethany's all like, "Quit judging me," blah blah blah, and then Martha's like, "I don't actually hate you," and she's like, "Really?" And she's like, "No, you just live in your hot girl bubble where you're either being treated like a princess or an object." And she's
political.
Like, "Well, also, but you're just kind of mean, and maybe you just decide you don't like people so that they can't not like you."
That's the best conversation between women in the movie, and it does end with like, "You're kind of hot, so just like own that."
Yeah.
It's
she's like yikes. Okay, I will.
And she's like, "I'm hot, me?" And oh god, it's
as it a is teenage- hot when women own it as a man. I'm just gonna put that out there.
As a teenager girl, I'm 14. No, but like when you're a teenage girl seeing a movie, there's nothing more like, especially if you're like a weird looking teenage girl who is, I don't know, wearing a back brace and will never fuck, right? I'm just pulling out of nothing. But like, it's going to see a movie and seeing a very hot like young actress be like, "I'm so weird and ugly," it just makes you just want to like murder
Furious.
Someone.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
like plenty of weird looking young actors out here. We walk past them on the street all the time.
But the question is, does this scene pass the Bechdel test?
I don't know. I want to because say it does.
It's Karen Gillan talking to Jack Black.
I think it passes on a real technicality.
Right, but it's Bethany and Martha talking.
About
but just in bodies that are not their own. So yeah. I don't know.
I think it does.
Well,
but
if
I
the man
hate
that they're
that
talking
does.
About is the body.
Oh.
Is that?
So, oh God.
Oh,
this movie's mean.
The scene after this where they talk again, where basically Bethany is teaching her how to be desirable to men, doesn't pass because she is being like, "Here's how to be hot and distract men."
Yeah.
But yeah, this one is a contender, but yeah, I guess we should say it passes because these characters still identify as Bethany and Martha.
And they're talking as Bethany
and Martha.
And Martha.
Yeah. So I guess
still,
it does.
Yes, I still think it's cheating, but yes.
Yeah. It's a gray area, but
well, the Bechdel, you know, doesn't have these kind of modern filters. You know?
Yeah, how could Alison sometimes Bechdel have predicted that Jack Black would be cast as a female lead?
But the movie, even if this scene didn't pass, the movie would still pass from a couple earlier scenes between Martha and Bethany in their own actual bodies.
And then
a scene at the very end where Bethany is like, "Hey, Lucinda, let's go camping." And she's like, "What? You want to go backpacking in nature?" And she's like, "Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes, Queen. I learned so much in the jungle, Queen."
So there you have it. Both movies pass the Bechdel test.
Yay.
But Jumanji versus Jumanji, which Jumanji is the hardest? I say Moana. Jumanji.
Zathura versus Moana. Which is the better Jumanji movie? Okay.
I'm going to say the first one's more iconic. It's got more feels. I mean, the second one is more like a remix. It's like such a different thing. Like, I appreciate it the same way I appreciate like some of the lesser like Star Trek series, where I'm just like, you're not as good Enterprise, but you're, I guess, still in the same universe, so I still love you.
Sure.
Well, Loser Talk with Brody has started and finished.
Loser, I'm very cool.
It's true. I think the first one, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the nostalgia alone for me, just having grown up with this movie and seen it so many times.
But the second one also is
super fun.
Good.
Fun. A fun They're movie. Fun movies. Shall we rate them on our nipple scale?
Let's do it.
Based on the portrayal of women. So the first one, I mean, all things considered, I think for me, when it comes down to if you examine like the big moments that the male characters have in influencing the direction that the story takes, it's almost always either Alan or Peter doing like, oh, I fixed it or I saved everybody or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the women get much fewer of those moments. And that, I think, is the biggest problem for me for this movie. So I'm going to give Jumanji 1995 two nipples. And they belong to the lion, who mostly just camps out in the bed the whole movie. So it gets to have a nice little relaxing time. So good for lion.
Okay. Slay bitch, yes, queen.
And for Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, I think because it was made decades later and had the opportunity to maybe correct some of the issues from the first movie, represent women better, give them more bearing on the story, give them more on-screen representation, all of that, it missed a lot of opportunities. Yeah. So,
and also the only woman we really see on screen is a conventionally hot white lady.
Right.
For the duration of the movie.
Yeah, yum, yum.
This has been Lady Talk with Brady Reed. Yum, yum.
If you saw my dating history, you would laugh harder.
This is Brady's dating corner.
Right, both movies are very white. So, you know, very little women of color representation.
Yeah, basically nothing in either movie.
Right. I think for Jumanji, I think Welcome to the Jungle is also going to get two nipples from me.
Yeah.
I do like that both movies touch on like kind of toxic masculinity being spread from man to man and how that isn't serving anyone and how that's not the best way to approach things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Again, there were more opportunities for things to be commented on and female characters to have more bearing on the story for both movies. So yeah, both of them get two nipples and the Jaguar from the second movie gets my other two nipples.
I'm down to go two and two as well. And I'm more annoyed with the second one for having to give it two. The first one is all kind of, I feel like, par for the course 90s missed opportunities and not like thoughtless, just movies did not consider much, you know, mm-hmm. back then. So I don't really have anything to add there. Yeah, the second one sucks because it is like, it feels like a sleazy, like, executive somewhere is like, we got all the themes in, but we said nothing. Like, it's just like, they reference it. It's very, anything remotely feminist that's explored is commercial you go girl feminism that says nothing, mm-hmm. still doubles down on, but you gotta be conventionally hot. And like, it's funny to like not have a perfect body for like an hour, you know? And yeah, in that regard, I was like frustrated of like there was potential. They took some wide swings in some regards, but in terms of like making any meaningful commentary, which is you go to a Jumanji movie and you expect some meaningful commentary.
Right?
But it was like there could have been, you know, better choices could have been made and I think weren't intentionally. So two and two, throw one to Bonnie Hunt, throw one to David Alan Greer, throw one to Nick Jonas and the alligator that he will resent until he dies.
How many nipples?
Out of five. Zero okay. to five.
Got it. I think I'm going to go two and two also. I never had a problem like thinking of the female characters in the first movie as real people. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. both nipples go to Bonnie Hunt.
Hell yeah.
And then the second movie, I think I feel the same. It's like for the reasons you guys have explored, it's not the most feminist movie, but it does like give screen time to trying. And I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? Like, I appreciate the effort, dudes. So I'll give it two, 1.5 nipples, and I'll give them to the hippo and...
Phone Cyclone the hippo.
Yeah.
And probably the snake.
Oh, yeah. This is crazy, but I do think Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle is one of the hardest movies we've ever covered on this show. It's, I think it's like very, like it was a challenging, there is arguably a scene where she says, Martha, get over here and look at my dick. No, thank you. That passes the Bechdel test, maybe.
Well, I mean,
we don't have to talk. I mean, but it's like, that's crazy that that is an issue. That's a talking point. Confusing. Because
they're
not,
they're talking about a part of a man, a cis man's body.
Well, we don't know if I mean, the man, are any of them technically cis? Because they're just like shells, you know?
Are any of them sexual beings?
But it is a man that, it's up to her if she identifies as it, you know what I mean? It's like,
right, that it gets into
And the video game characters, I would argue, aren't sexual beings. Because all the sexual vibes that we get are from the characters and not the video game characters.
Yeah.
So they're not combating against any sexuality from the video game characters, so I'm assuming it's not there.
Yeah.
So then I think that would pass the Bechdel test.
Fuck.
One of our wildest passes, yeah. So yeah, as Chuck Black would say, fuck. Oh my God, Instagram.
Oh, okay. Well, Brody, thank you so much.
Thank you for being
guys, thanks for having
being
me on the last podcast.
Oh, yeah, we're ending it. Sorry.
Hey, keep it crispy, you guys.
This is just the last episode we're recording in this location. Mm-hmm. So don't cry.
It's the last time we're going to be extremely hot in this tiny room.
Yeah. Hopefully next spot we'll have an air conditioner. Brody, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at AOBroBro. You know, I'm trying to release a lot of short films this year. You can check that out on brodyreed.com/videos.
Cool. Yeah. Yay. You can connect with us and find us on social media, such as Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. We've got some merch to buy. Some buttons, some stickers.
I saw. I just went on a little tour, and I saw people across this great nation sporting their buttons, their little pins. Shouts out to the group of people in Chicago that all showed up with their little feminist icon pins.
Cool.
Oh, that's so cute.
The true heroes.
Yay.
The true heroes.
So. Also, subscribe to our Matreon.
Yes.
Yep. That's great.
Yep. Thank you. And as always, thanks for listening. And we can't end this episode until we all say the magic words.
Jumanji. Yeah, I didn't realize you were doing that. I was like, oh man, I never listened to the end of the podcast.
Good job, everybody. Bye.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.